Okay, I'm taking a different route than I usually do with this parsha. It's actually parsha means a lot to me. This is my parsha of my ufruf. Zach Katz told me yesterday, quoted something I said years ago. It's a weird parsha of ufruf because it happened to be about the wayward woman. It's like about a woman who's a sota, which is weird to speak about. Well, I did speak about it in my ufruf, but it's weird to talk about it. So I'm not going to talk about it right now. I'm going to discuss a different topic, which is a fascinating story in Navi, which is the Haftorah of the parsha, which is the story of Shimshon. Now, I want to analyze just a few basic questions that come up in the story. You can ask many questions. Shimshon is a very polarizing figure. I mean, if you read the story, I should have asked you guys, actually, I meant to ask you, and I forgot. So look through the story in advance today. I wanted to do that. That was my intention, just so you have a little more appreciation of the story, how crazy the story is. But he's a polarizing figure. He did, like, crazy stuff regarding his heroic physical. He also seemed to be very weak when it came to women. He married a Philistine woman, Shimshon. We know Samson and Delilah. So he married out, though he was supposed to. Though he's called Shimshon like Gibor, he was a Gibor. What does Gibor according to Pirkei Avos? What does Gibor mean according to Pirkei Avos? Kovshet Yitzro. So it's a weird term to use for Chazal, but yet we assume that he did Kovshet Yitzro, and he did marry. There's a whole lot of questions asked about Shimshon, a lot of questions. So we'll start with a few of them ourselves. Number one, Shimshon is most famous for what?
His hair.
Why is his hair never cut? Because he was a Nazir. Now, usually a Nazir, if anyone here reads the Parsha, it's a response. It's a response to something. As a matter of fact, Chazal will tell us that if you see a Sota, I think Max Borg goes last night, so your instant response is like, my gosh, like, even though Rabbi Zikin had some good, interesting question on that point, he says, you know, your immediate response will be like, you know, I'm swearing off wine. It's a response to something. The famous story of a Nazir is a person who saw his own shadow in the reflection in the water, and he was like, he saw how beautiful he was, and he said, I can't be like this, it's a Yitzhar, and I gotta be a Nazir. So, you're just responsible. Yet, Shimshon, for some reason, from birth, was a Nazir. Wasn't even his call to make. An angel told his parents to make that call. That's question number one. What's his concept? Why is he a Nazir from birth? Usually it's a response. Number two, besides looking at the story of Shimshon, but actually looking at Chazal portrays Shimshon very differently in different places. Just give examples. So Yaakov Avinu, when he was giving the brachas to different shvatim, so he gave the bracha of Dan, says, Lishuas Kivisi Hashem, you know, I pray your salvation. Say Chazal talking about Shimshon. Because Yaakov felt Shimshon was supposed to be Mashiach. He was the best. Maybe that would ever walk the earth with Shimshon. Skibar and Sotat Yud brings down and says that when Shimshon judged Klal Yisrael, he judged them as if God judged them. That's how good a shofet he was. Shimshon has a level of righteousness that we look at that is unparalleled, it sounds like. In Yaakov's eyes, as being a great shofet, Shimshon is like the star of the show. And yet, we have Gemara to tell you otherwise. The Gemara in Sota as well tells you Shimshon straight with his eyes. It's not, you know, you picture some big gadol. Imagine a big gadol. Imagine you even see, you go to gadol, and he for a second would even look at a woman like she walks by, and he takes like a look like that. You'd be like, what? Seriously? And yet Shimshon, he rebelled with his eyes. How could you be Mashiach, almost, and yet be like that? How could you be called a person who is a shofet like God, and yet rebel with your eyes? And then, just icing on the cake, remember what Shana brings down, is that it pits basically three leaders versus three leaders. These three leaders were great leaders, versus these three who were not so great. It puts Moshe, Aaron, and Shmuel, tremendous leaders, versus, like a 3-on-3 tournament, and they destroyed him. They mercyed the other team. Gideon, Yiftach, and Shimshon. All shoftim. It was a mercy killing. It was not even close. We put Shimshon in the category not like these great leaders. So we have to figure out for ourselves, we read the story of Shimshon, which one is it? Was Shimshon the Gibor who was Kovetius Yitzro, who was a man who could have been Mashiach? Or was he a person who was a tragic figure who had a lot of challenges? And straight with his eyes, and made the second, he would be in the V2 league of leaders. I don't want to offend anybody. That's our question we start with. And I just want to move on for a second, if I can, to a fascinating, just a few horrors regarding Shimshon's pre-birth, even. And really the Haftorah is not about Shimshon's life, it's about Shimshon's pre-life. It's about his birth. And it's about, you know, the father, Manoach, and his wife, whose name was Ashes Manoach. Who didn't see that one coming, huh? I've got a great guy for you. His name is Manoach. Ash is Manoach. He couldn't ask for a better fit than that, right? Jamie, where's Jamie? Hey, Jamie. I need that that Florida run on with the butter now? You know, something for, I need that right now. I need that. You missed it, but I'm struggling here. It's okay. Anyways, the story goes that Manoach, his wife, was in the field, and a person came. You gotta embrace the awkward moments. You gotta embrace that. This thing, person came and he said that you're gonna have a child, and he gave his whole prophecy, and he said you can't drink wine. You, the mother also, from birth, you have to make sure your son does not ingest anything through the umbilical cord. So you can't have grapes. You can't drink wine. You can't have anything. And Manoach couldn't believe it afterwards, and he said, "I don't believe it. I need him to come again." Sure enough, he davened, and he said he came again. And the story goes, I'll read you this, it's a very unusual thing. It says, "V'lo Yosef," at the very end, after he came again, "V'lo Yosef od Malach Hashem le'aros el Manoach v'ishto," that the Malach never came back. He never came back to Manoach or to his wife. "Az yada Manoach ki Malach Hashem hu," and then Manoach knew that in fact this was a Malach Hashem. Says Rav Shwadron, why in the world would that be the reason why he knew? What my kesher, if someone would come back later on or not, oh, now he didn't come back. Must be he's a Malach Hashem. So he told over the following fascinating idea, which is a little bit embarrassing as a human being, which we're all part of the same race, the same group, same species. That every human being who does something for someone else that's a kindness will always make sure to come back again so you see them, so you thank them for it. I mean, imagine they did you a favor. I had you for Shabbos. So I'll call you up and say, "Hey, what do you think about Shabbos?" "Oh, Rabbi, thank you so much. It was great." Right? Every human being, we have the need for people to appreciate what we've done. And therefore, by definition, if I do you a favor, I'll make myself near you, found by you somewhere where you'll see me and be like, "Oh, thank you so much for what happened." If you don't say it, I'll be like, "Hey, how's things going?" "Good." Like, "Good." If you don't say it, I'll be like, "Are you feeling better than before?" "Oh, yeah, thank you so much for bringing me the medicine." I need a way, I'm a human, I need to have a way to feel good about myself. I need it. It's part of man. Again, it's not to say good, but man, sometimes they want to get some also. I want to feel appreciated, provided for, that you care about what I did for you. I'm not okay with just pretending, "Oh, we both know what happened, and let's leave it at that." The fact that Manoach that he never saw the angel again is a sign, it can't have been a person. Because had it been a person who made such a nice promise to Manoach, he would have been by the way, "Hey, so, new and news? Thank you so much. I appreciate it." He never came back. So Rav Shwadron has decided that he's not. He must have been an angel. It's actually a Mishnah novel I was doing with my Sephardi brothers just yesterday, where I mentioned it, where we did together actually way back, just full circle almost, beginning of the year. It says, I think it's Yisocho said in Mishnah Gimel Perak Aleph that you should not serve your master to get pras. Rather, here's a Girsa question. Well, I'll do the more extreme Girsa. Rather, serve your master or serve God on condition to not get reward. Dafka, so I don't get reward. Why? Because the greatest reward you get is time with God. Olam Haba is cheap. It's just for people who aren't so faithful to God. If you love someone so much, you wouldn't want nothing more than to be near them. I could do you a favor? You kidding me? Where do I sign up? Picture someone who you care, you admire, from afar, from close, I don't care. You can do him a favor? Tell me where do I start? I'll do anything for you I could. Don't give me anything out of it. I don't want anything out of it. Just even if you didn't know about it, if I could do something without you knowing about it, I would do it. You know why? It's like I do something for you. At the greatest level we have is to do something without any ulterior motives. I don't even want Olam Haba out of the deal. I just want to get close. I want to do something for you, God. Greatest level. We told a story, if you remember, way back in the day, we told a story of the Vilna Gaon with the Esrog. Remember the story? That he had to sell his Zechuyos from the Esrog in order to get that year's Esrog, because there was a big famine in the town. Not only did he do it, but he did it with such excitement. For the first time, he knows he's doing something for God that has no ulterior motives, no even Olam Haba. That's the highest level you can possibly imagine. And yet, how many of us, even Olam Haba is not enough for us? It's not enough for us to add Olam Haba. Because you know why? Because it requires us to sacrifice things that we don't want to sacrifice. So even Olam Haba is not enough of a carrot upon a stick to do it for. That's shot number one that was mentioned in Rosh Hashanah. As you look along, Shimshon, I don't know if you guys know how he ended, his life ended, but it's a tragic ending, but a great song. Our favorite sings it. Zachrenina, Zachrenina. Anyone? Zachrenina. Who sings that? Ohad? I don't even know who sings it. I think it is Ohad. He doesn't have words. There's no words in that one, I don't think. There's no words, right? So if you look in the in the pasuk where it describes Shimshon's final prayer to God. It's in Perek Tezayin, pasuk Chavches. Here he is, this Nebuchadnezzar of a leader right now. His eyes are poked out, he's blind. He's chained to the pillars of this big, it's a coliseum, let's say, where it has a roof on top of it, because it's some sort of a big auditorium. Thousands upon thousands of Philistine people are there celebrating the downfall of this great warrior. And Shimshon here starts to daven to God, his final prayer to God. He says to him, Zachrini na, Hashem Elokim, Zachrini na v'chazkeni na, Achapam hazeh Elokim. This one time, God, he had no strength left. He was weak. He was a regular guy now. He had lost his nazir's power. He lost his being a gibor. He says, V'nekam achas b'shtei inai b'plishtim. I had two eyes poked out. Give me one of those eyes. This credit me with one of those eyes. I want to use the schus of that eye I had lost. So let me give the strength one last time to destroy the plishtim. And the other eye will save for my reward in Gan Eden, in Olam Haba. Hashem responds and he answers and he kills everyone. Rashi there brings down, he says that the truth is that Shimshon, what he was saying was, you know, and looking at Rashi, he quotes Chazal, you know that God, I never had one person do anything for me my entire time of being a judge. So I'm asking you now, I did nothing with everyone for me now, I have to do something for me for the first time ever. The first time, do something for me and let me destroy everyone. And Hashem granted his wish. Rav Chaim Shulevitz in Sichos Musar says, I don't understand. Every single leader, people do things for him. They treat him with kavod, they give him a gift. You know, everyone does. There's no one in the world, imagine you have someone who's this big, important person in the world. Every person has someone do something for him. What do you mean nothing to do for him? Nothing they did for him. Everyone, people do things all the time, I'm sure. So Rav Chaim Shulevitz brings down in Sichos Musar says that he never one time got personal enough from anything that happened until now. Never. As a leader for Klal Yisrael for X amount of years, it's Chazal say the Rashi said there were 20 years, he never took one thing. As a leader of Klal Yisrael for those 20 years, he never one time got any personal benefit out of anything that happened. So if that's the case, then where did Shimshon go wrong? What was his flaw? So Pinkus has an unbelievable shot. Pinkus I forgot what it's called. It's prior from the Torah. Maybe Nevi Shimshon al Torah. I don't think it's called Shimshon. Maybe it is Nevi Shimshon al Torah. In this piece, in the very back, he has longer articles. It's a very beautiful idea. He points out how unbelievable Torah is. Think about this for a moment. Imagine you're studying math. You're in fifth grade. You're studying math. So you have a certain basic textbook. Imagine you're studying in Harvard College math in the fourth year. So you don't use the same textbook. You can't use the same textbook. It's impossible. It's ridiculous. How in the world is it possible that we study the same exact text, same exact verbatim, word for word, right now, that a kid who's in the ninth grade, in pick whatever school you want in America, you're reading the same Mishnah, the same Gemara, the same Rashi. When you go through Parsha, you and a 13-year-old Britzel boy who does Shai Mikra like he's supposed to, read the same exact Pasuk, same exact Rashi. It makes no sense for any normal text or any normal pursuit of study that you and someone else will do the same thing. It makes no sense at all. Except for one reason. The Torah is infinitely wise. The wisdom that's found in Torah is unbelievable. It's godlike. And you can read a book that someone else can read, and it has a tremendous impact on both of you. As a matter of fact, we're told the Gemara Jerusalem breaks down that Barati Yitzhara, Barati Torah Tavlin. God created Yitzhara, He created it as its enemy, its counterpart, Torah. As you grow in life, the Torah you learn will grow with you and it will combat the Yetzer Hara that's also growing inside of you. Which means you have the following dilemma. And this is where Shimshon and Korah Pinkus fell. Is that at some point in time, the Torah he was learning, it stopped advancing for him. For whatever reason it was. Maybe because he was married to a Philistine woman. Maybe because he felt like he was already a big shofet at the time. But as his Yetzer Hara continued to grow, his Torah learning, stopped growing. And he couldn't combat anymore. We're spending time right now in our development of life, this Shana Aleph age, learning X amount of Torah. And we're in a position to do so because we're not around the things that are as distracting sometimes. As you get more in life, you get later on in life, your need for Torah study doesn't diminish, it increases. You need more than ever. As we're about to take steps out towards the door and head in the second part of our religious development, not the second part, the next part of religious development, more than ever you need to learn now. Stop it now as you're walking out to make sure you get into a groove, because the next stage of life, the Yetzer is that much stronger. And for you to not bring your A game to your development and learning, so then, it's like Shimshon, you know, the ending is not going to be pretty. How could you possibly, God created a Yetzer that is so strong, but he gave us the anecdote. That's the Torah. For you to put the Torah on the side, because now I'm in college, I'm developing in different ways right now, it means that the Yetzer, as it grows, it's not being combated with the Torah that's there. And that's what we're picking to say was a problem for Shimshon as well. That he was developing as a shofet, as a leader, with Torah learning, advancing, until it stopped advancing. His Yetzer Hara never stopped. His leadership never stopped. The Torah did. And he still learned it. But he didn't learn it as an advancing person. He learned it as a child would learn it. As yesterday we learned it. But today is a different challenge for you. As we're now, just as a little different chizuk, as we're now, you know, you can feel in the air, whether it be the heat or just, you know, people stam, as people are starting to leave. People have, you know, have left already. People are leaving tonight. People are leaving next week. Starting already. You have two choices. Again, your mind goes elsewhere. Or you say to yourself, you know, Zachrinina v'chaskenina, God. Like Shimshon said. I need a chizuk right now. More than ever. I'm having a tough day. It's, you know, it's the height of the NHL playoffs. The height of the NBA playoffs. I need help. Just to give me the clarity of what really is important right now. Right now, at least, for me. Right now. I have a week plus left, maybe. Chazkeini na, give me chizuk over here. I need some extra chizuk to pull this off. You know, just a little further, if I can. I'll end in a few minutes. I'm not gonna go too far over. Rav Dessler points out that usually it's part of the reason why Shimshon needed such extra help from birth. Is that almost always the shofet lived among the people. He lived among the Jewish people, that is. But Shimshon did not. It wasn't supposed to. God wanted to actually marry into the Plishti families. God wanted to live among the Plishti so he could invade, infiltrate, and destroy from inside, which he did a pretty good job of. And therefore, he needed an extra level of chizuk to become a nazir later on in life, or to get nevuah, you know, only at a later stage, or not nevuah, but to be a shofet. That wouldn't cut it for Shimshon. Because he was completely surrounded in his life, where he lived, by people who were not Kadosh. And therefore, more than anyone else, he needed to have Nazirus at a younger stage for that reason. Again, I'll remind you, people who are, the next step of life is upon many of us. Those of you who are going to the next level, that's outside of the yeshiva environment. So again, not less, more than ever, must we have a commitment to Torah. It's not that many must be a bigger priority than it ever was. Your kviyas eats the Torah. If you miss a seder here in the morning, you know what? There's always afternoon seder you can get to. You miss a shacharis for some reason, God forbid. So you mincha, you know it's when it's coming. Your days surround Torah and God. It is not like that when you walk out. Even in yeshivas that have areas where it's part of your day, it's not like it necessarily. People's focuses are different. Your focus will be different. And kal v'chomer, where there is no yeshiva with you. Kal v'chomer. The amount of effort you must take with you is multiple, exponentially greater than what you had over here. So when you're ending your last few days to go on a downer, on a bad streak, on a burnout feeling, you must fight with every ounce of your power to end strong. You must. Because from this point forward, even if you're coming back next year, the summertime is not a yeshiva setting for many of us. And therefore, your job is to leave on a high. With strength, chazkenina. Rav Nevenzahl had a different shot, and this I'll close, or I'll lead to closing, as I always say. He said that the reason, the issue that Shimshon had, was not that he was married to Delilah, not that he lived among the Philistines either. His greatest issue that he had was that he embraced those things. I'll give you a muscle if I can. Yaakov Avinu, you know, had to lie to his father to steal a bracha. He had to lie. The amount of pain he went through, even he begged his mama, I don't want to do this. It was so difficult, so counter everything he stood for, but he had to for what he needed to do next in his life. Shimshon was like Yaakov also. He also had to do things that were not pleasant to do. But you know what, at the end of the day, he was fine with it. He embraced his wife. I mean, literally, I'm sure literally also. He embraced the opportunity to marry Delilah. He embraced it. Can you imagine a person in the Mossad, let's say, who's stationed somewhere to infiltrate some Arab area, and he is married with a kid, let's say, and he leaves home for years. They tell them, you know what happened to him, but they know what happened to him. Could you imagine? There's not a second he wouldn't want to be home. I don't care who he's married to, the prettiest girl out there, he even has two kids with her. That person who's committed for not for a second would be happy being where he is. Not for a second. It would pain him so much. Shimshon was supposed to marry Delilah. He was supposed to among the Philistines, among the Plishtim. But it was supposed to ache every single day. Why can't I be here? Why can't I be with the people on the other side, with my Jewish friends, my Jewish brothers? And it stopped bothering him. And that's where he went wrong. You know, people say all the time to us, all the time, I get this all the time. As someone who teaches here, it kills me. And I speak to parents all the time, it's time for them to go back to the real world. It's time. It's approaching the real world. You know what the real world is? I can promise you it's not money. I can promise it's not real world. The world that you live in, you're a matrix of the world. So money is very important. Status. Beauty. That's the matrix we live in. The real world? Well, let's ask God. He made it. He created it. We created us. Why don't we ask Him what the real world is? You know what the real world is to sit and be a server of God. That's the real world. We have a single problem. Is that we were cursed by God. Because Adam Rishon did a terrible thing. He had one law to keep, but he didn't keep it. So God cursed him with having to work. So here we are, we're Shimshon. We're stuck. We have a new topic in life. We got to be married to the Philistine, living among the Philistines. We have to do. We have to work. We have to be among people in the world who aren't our type necessarily. And work. Do you act like a Shimshon? Where you're good with it. Not good with it. I'm looking forward to it. You kidding me? I get to live now in the Arab communities where the Philistines, I can marry whoever I want. Life is great. Option one. And then you have the terrible, tragic ending that Shimshon had. Well, Yaakov, you know, there's not a moment that goes by you're not wishing to come back. You know why? To the real world. The world that God made for us to be serving God completely. It's not a moment of your life that goes back and you're not dying to go back again. I said this way back weeks ago, months ago. I'll tell it to you one more time quickly. We're told when Yaakov Avinu goes back to meet Esav, he says, "In love and Garti." Garti is the letters of Taryag. And Rashi there quotes and says, "Taryag mitzvah, I kept 613 mitzvahs, I kept them all." That is not true. We did Megillah. He didn't keep what? Keep it out of aim, Elon. Very good. He didn't keep you out of aim. He was punished for 22 years for it. So I've quoted so many times, I'll quote it to you now. I forget, I don't know who said it, but someone whose wife is Michalah, her husband, one time, someone quoted to me this line. Shamarti means I never stopped waiting for the chance to keep them again. I hated being with loved one. I felt filthy. It was disgusting for me. Then never a day would go by when I would not wish for it to all to end. I can go back to my father's house and just be close to God. There's a phrase. The phrase is Itinok Habrech Beit Sefer. The school bell rings, last day of school, you grab your knapsack and you bolt out the door. And it's like free. When you end the yeshiva, there are many people who will bolt out the door. Many people will bolt out the door. But there are those who won't. You know why? Because they realize that there's a certain clarity and opportunity you have when you're here, only when you're here. I don't mean here in yeshiva. I mean in the yeshiva setting. That you're able to do the right thing. That all the facades that we need to live in. We need to. But they go away. They go away when we're here sometimes. And we just have clarity. And we know that we have to live a life that's not like this. It's okay. But don't ever embrace that. Don't ever let someone say to you, "Oh, come back to the real world now." The real world? Did you ask God what the real world is? He's happy to share with you the real world is. I'll end with the final story. There was I read today, Rabbi Kiva Eger. When he was a young boy, 12 years old. So his uncle was a big Rosh Hashiva. And there was a question that came up that was a stumper. No one knew the answer to the question. And Stam, as like, just, you know, to share with his brother, the Rosh Hashiva's brother was Rabbi Kiva Eger's father. So he sent a letter to his father, just, you know, updating to his own brother, his father, updating that life, and just posed the question. Look at this fascinating, you know, thing that we're dealing with now. No one knows the answer to the question. And Rabbi Akiva Eiger was known to be a genius. But the father figured to himself, come here, break. There's no chance that my 12-year-old son can chop something that the entire yeshiva learning world, Roshi Yeshiva, Mashgichim, people were doing this for years, you know, couldn't get. And he didn't tell him about it. But then, at some point in time, a conversation later on, maybe a week or two later on, he posed the question, and before he even finished the question, he gave a pshat. Now, pshat was interesting, meaning the father says, oh, it's an interesting pshat. I can't imagine it's right. I can't imagine. It doesn't make no sense to talk to my 12-year-old kid without thinking about it for a second. It doesn't make any sense to me. So, but he figured, you know what, let me share it. Okay, maybe it's an aura. Maybe it's an idea. Let me share it with my brother. So he goes back to the brother. He gets my back afterwards and says, that shot is unbelievable. And him and his wife look at each other like smiling nachas. Wow, our son, the genius, answered a question that no one told those except for him. He's 12 years old. Then he said the next line caused him to panic. You must send your son to me to be in my yeshiva. Send him. I'll take care of him. Send him to me and we'll take care of him. Could you imagine your parents who want nothing more than to raise their child, to love their child? And all of a sudden, the child has a talent. They have some unbelievable talent that's like the talent of a lifetime. But you have to give them up. To give up your kid. Rabbi Akiva Eiger's father and mother sat and they cried. This is our gem. This is our diamond. What gives us the right to hold him away, though? As a parent, are you kidding me? I'll never let him go as a parent. But as a Jew, what gives you the right to hold yourself back? And they sent him off, knowing that who knows it's him again? Who knows? They did see each other again. There are stories later on, they saw each other again. When a person has a clarity in life and understands what the world's about, he doesn't embrace his charade. He doesn't embrace the ridiculous things that we so much focus on. You know, again, I'll say something I can't believe I didn't say it again, but Game 7 is on a Friday night. Game 7 of the hockey. For a person for a second to believe that his life will change ki hu zeh by somehow following or knowing what happens in a hockey game is the most degrading thing to God. It's degrading to God. You think God created you so that you wouldn't miss a score in a hockey game or Shabbos? When it's an os b'ni b'neichem, I'm a Kabbal one thing. I'm a Kabbal that it's very hard as a sports fan. It's very hard to miss out an event. I'm a Kabbal that. I'm not belittling that. I'm not. But don't belittle yourself either. You're lucky to have challenges in life. You're lucky. It's a chance to test how you do. I'll give you a bracha. You should have the wisdom of Shlomo HaMelech. Well, being a Gibor like Shimshon. But understand the whole way through that you're living a charade. That's okay. That's our job. We're in the most time. We're supposed to live a charade. But don't ever, like Yaakov Avinu, don't ever stop wishing for the time when I could just do what I'm supposed to be doing here. When the day ends, when you walk out of yeshiva, and the day is over, you look back, not with a kid who grabs his knapsack and runs out the door and slams the door behind him and says, it's free! With a heavy heart. This is it. Like, this is a moment of your life that you may never get back again. Not always in the moment, this is the real moment. Have a good Sabbath.